KBOO is currently running a Kickstarter campaign to build a city of media makers. From February 8th to March 9th, you can become a media maker and help spread the word. Just go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter between now and March 9th to join.
Continent to outside. And then we saw much more recently in the Paradise Papers leak that Shanduka, a company which Cyril Ramaphosa founded in 2001...
Coquetto, we just have 10 seconds.
...as shifting profits from the country. So there is a pattern of behavior.
So are you concerned about what this means for South Africa in our last 5 seconds?
Completely. I think we should be deeply concerned, and we should be just as vigilant as we were in the times that we had President Jacob Zuma, if not more so. The moment that we in after Zuma has stepped down should not see civic movement.
Coquetto Moete, I want to thank you for being with us, founder of Amandla Mobi. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, February 20th at 5:30 p.m.
KBOO is building a city of media makers. We believe that strong, resilient communities know how to make their own media. For 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio. And we know that, with our expertise and your support, we can keep the city activated and aware through radio we make together. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today.
Join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
No classrooms, no teachers, no students at KBOO. Only community members sharing their skills with one another and passing on what they have learned from another DJ to the next generation of programmer. We believe we all have something to teach and we all have something to learn. Knowledge should be free to access. Your support of KBOO ensures this. Help us build a city of artist media makers. Long live DIY radio and join us on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Good morning, good morning. It's about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, honey.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Lynn. I know you're listening.
Yes, and we thank you for that, and we thank all of you for tuning in this morning to Positively Revolting, and I really want to thank Teresa for joining me in the studio. We are here, Positively Revolting as ever. And this week, a few things came together to get us thinking about gender role socialization, heteronormativity, and non-traditional families. And so a couple of those things being Valentine's Day and an appearance in town by Sylvia Federici. It was a great alignment, I think. And so it really got us thinking when, you know, when Valentine's comes around, it's a cute holiday. I've always kind of enjoyed it in a, you know, chocolate heart kind of way. But the other thing with Valentine's is it is so very heteronormative, let's just say, that for folks that are not in a traditional pairing, it can feel like a really lonely, alienating, exclusionary sort of time. And since I don't think I've ever been involved in a traditional heteronormative pairing, it always kind of wrinkles on me in that way, with the glossy images of very straight-looking people doing very sort of traditional jokes and memes and such like that. Like, you know, come on, guys, if you don't get her flowers, you know you're not getting, you know, to have some fun. And what is all that about? And a lot of the humor around it is kind of misogynist. I should probably eliminate my qualification of kinda.
The sort of sex as transaction quality of it.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Sex as economic transaction.
Totally anyway. That. That is exactly what I'm saying. Thank you.
$60 flowers equals?
Yeah, a night of good times. So what is that about? And in to those of us that, well, don't think that that kind of transactive transactional relationship is particularly fulfilling nor desirable. For those of us who construct families in different ways, for those of us that eschew binary gender role enforcement, where does it leave us? So we thought we would talk this morning about that, about our family, about your family. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. I also mentioned the other event, which was Sylvia Federici being in town. She is possibly best known, well, for her book, Caliban and the Witch, but also in the early 70s, she was very instrumental in demanding wages for housework and for looking at how much real work of reproducing our societies, reproducing our species, creating the future is unpaid work and traditionally laid at the feet of women. And how has that played into economic inequalities and the ignoring of the work that women have done for generations, like all of them, all of the generations, to keep the species going and to keep our societies reproducing.
It's all about power relations, isn't it? And I think it's fun to think that as a Valentine's present last night, you took me to see The Death of Stalin, which is all about power relations. And it's a comedy. It's a very black comedy, and I got a hoot out of it. But it did bring up what it's like to be around that sort of extreme power relations, where you have this monster dictator, this man who originally was the appropriator, the bank robber for the Bolsheviks, and eventually became the confronter of Hitler. And after he was the confronter of Hitler, well, he was the confronter of everyone. He was all about Stalin. What Stalin said was law. And more than that, what Stalin said was science. And it's really, and there are echoes today, people like that, Kim Jong-un and our dear leader Trump, exercise some degree of those power relations. And this is also reflected in, as you say, heteronormative, as in, don't you call me heteronormative. who would want to be? But
don't you worry, honey. I was never going to.
I know, but it just oh. That would sting, wouldn't it? But it's all of a piece, because it patriarchy, like Stalinism, depends on silence and lies and collaboration with the paradigm and ways of dealing with something that's basically sick and unbalanced.
Yeah, I quite concur. Let's go ahead and listen to what Helen has to say. Good morning, Helen. You're on the air.
Hi. Okay, Valentine's Day is my most favorite day, and it's Oregon's birthday, and I noticed that I don't think they said too much on the news. Sometimes I've had to call the radio station and say, don't forget it's Oregon's birthday,
mm-hmm.
because really what it's all about is everybody gets to be loved. It's just not for a couple or whatever. It's all of us get to celebrate.
I think that any excuse to celebrate love is an important thing.
Yes.
I think that love is the strongest force in the universe. I really, uh-huh. you know, it can be fierce, it can be gentle. It is how I try to operate in this world. And at the same time, when we have all of the images of glossy, fairly young, looking pretty affluent couples in all of the media marketing and that sort of thing, with the pressure of having a date on Valentine's and that sort of thing, I know it doesn't necessarily feel that way to a lot of people.
Ooh, time to quote Emma Goldman.
But I absolutely do appreciate, your idea of, you know, it's a good time to celebrate love. Every day is
also
a good time to celebrate love.
I don't really notice it that way as far as couples, because I think that at least in Oregon it's just...
maybe go to Walmart. If I go to Walmart and an older woman's getting great big teddy bear for a child, and it's just taking care of everybody. That's what it is. That's what Oregon's cool. all about, is caring about everybody.
Well, see,
Oregon.
Now here's the thing. Born in Portland, love Oregon, been here my whole life. And yet, when we became a state, it's important to remember that there were actually sundown laws that prohibited black people from existing in much of the state after sundown, or being in public. And so I think it's super important not to gloss over some of our really ugly history of genocide and racism. Love Oregon, but it's important not to sugarcoat it and to really reckon with our history.
Well, I guess I hear what you say. But I cannot, for myself, take on the burden and suffering of everything that's happened.
But we must, because, in fact, it is our responsibility to know and reconcile what has happened with the world that we want to create.
Okay.
And we each have a piece of it.
Yeah, we take on the profits easily enough. Hey, okay, you're going to like this Emma Goldman quote.
Okay, so here is one. You should call planning in Portland, because it's the Vanishing Views. That they want to build up Portland more and more, so nobody's going to be able to see the mountain after a while.
It's true. It's true that. And, yeah, thank you very much for that call. Teresa, okay. You have an Emma Goldman quote. I love Emma.
If love does not know how to give and take without restrictions, it is not love, but a transaction that never fails to lay stress on a plus and a minus.
See, I love Emma Goldman. Love her.
See, I knew you'd like that quote.
See, I've rarely found one I haven't liked. Though I'm sure they exist. Please do not challenge me too much this morning, dear listeners. go ahead and do give us a call, though, with your comments about love, about family, about non-traditional family, about all manner of things of that nature, gender role enforcement and, binary gender conformity. All of these things have played into our thoughts this week as we have celebrated Valentine's Day and listened to Sylvia Federici. How are we, in this day, moving ahead to make sure that everyone involved in a relationship is, say, also taking care of the house that relationship exists in, is taking care of children if that relationship has chosen to have some or one. How are we dividing our domestic labor? International Women's Day is coming up on March 8th, as it does every year. And I remember being a PSU student in the 80s, and hearing about how women in the Soviet Union got the day off work and were celebrated by the men, and I thought, this is brilliant. And then I was talking to my professor. I was a Russian student. And found out from my dear professor that, yes, women were the majority of doctors in the Soviet Union. They were well represented in physicists and other science fields. And again, I'm truly excited and thinking, thank God I'm learning to speak Russian. I could go any minute now. And then also found out that they were still absolutely responsible for the upkeep of the house and the caring of children. And I thought, whoa. So we can achieve in the sciences, we can achieve in the workforce, we can be recognized as fully cognizant human beings, and you're still not getting out of, doing the laundry, mopping the floors, and changing the diapers.
That so essential work that absolutely has to be done and then somehow becomes entirely the responsibility of women. And there are various excuses, and they're all pretty lame, aren't they? I mean, it's... Yeah. laid to the reproductive role of women as if men were not the other half of it. But that's, I mean, it's part of blaming women for, it's like, well, you can say, well, women don't show up as consistently in the workplace because they have to take care of children. But who says that women are the only ones that take care of children? It's the men who say that. It's the corporations that maintain that by not promoting or enforcing, for that matter, that'd be a whole different way of looking at it, paternity leave.
And there was a wonderful example of this, actually. And by wonderful, I mean, yeesh, what year is this? This week, Serena Williams returned to the court after having her child, and her husband was in attendance. And many headlines labeled her husband said that her husband was babysitting their child. And I wanted to know when the last time you ever saw a woman referred to as babysitting their child. Fathers babysit their children. Mothers take care of children.
A special extra thing, babysitting.
It was so kind of him, you know, when he didn't really have to do that. I mean, he could have hired a babysitter, but in fact chose to, I think we call it parent, actually, when one of the, parents are involved. It just kind of blows my mind that here we are in 2018, and this is how we're referring to men taking on the role of fathering.
And that slid right past me, too, when you were saying it was like, yeah, babysitting, and it just didn't occur to me because I was, 41 years socialized as a male, so that worked for me. Slid right past.
Yep, it did. I see. I wasn't going to confess that for you. Thank you. Thank you very much for bearing your soul for our audience this morning. Yeah, I was railing about this headline, and Teresa kept asking, so is it about the economic relationship? was it that they referred to her husband as a billionaire? I'm like, no, it's not about the fact they referred to her husband as a millionaire. It's about the fact they referred to the father of the child as a babysitter. Oh, right. I think was sort of how the conversation went. Because you often say, oh, right, in that way.
And that shows how powerful that sort of conditioning is. Because when you met me, I was in a rather non-traditional role. For 1990, let's see, what was it, 1993 or 94, I was, my then wife had left, and I was raising a child on my own. Pretty unusual. When I would ride the bus with my child, people would ask me where her mother was, and just assume that it was odd that I should be alone with the child on the bus.
Yeah. And we still see reactions like that, and I still hear about it from fathers, and it, again, blows my mind. Let's go ahead and talk to Mike. Mike, you're on hold. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, KBOO.
Good morning.
Thank you for the honesty and the nice conversation, and pointing out the obvious, fact that we're still catching up with our potential.
Yes. And, that's a good way to put it.
It's real easy. Yesterday I was messing around on the internet. It's real easy to find other national or accepted cultural traditions all over the world that is different than the Valentine's Day of most of America.
Mm-hmm.
some of my family's from Norway. I'm linked desktop, like linked to a nature site in Norway. And anyway, there were lots of comments and pictures about the way they see it. And it's not that they're rejecting the celebration of romantic love, which is a very small part of love, mm-hmm. probably the easiest part of love and the least in our control part of love. They make it clear that it's about love in general. It's about anyone you want to show love to today that maybe you haven't or wish to or mm-hmm. just want to celebrate. That's what it's about. It's about friendship. And I thought that was beautiful. So I looked around, and there's lots of other cultures that I don't know if they're rejecting the celebration of this, the strictly small romantic love aspect, or if they're just trying to celebrate the real impactful and cultural aspect of respecting love and celebrating love. Mm-hmm. But it really is, you know, putting up with your neighbors, stuff like that, and dealing with the ones that you live with every day that, you know, don't put the toothbrush in the right place, and you know, it's stuff like that. It's not about, I mean, yes, it's about romantic love, but wow, what a small part of it's just a very small part. And I doubt any Catholic saint was just strictly referring to romantic love anyway. So,
well, it reminds me of the other side of that Emma Goldman quote.
Thanks, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
The other side would be that, you know, really without equality, how can you have love? What is love when it's not equal? Is it even love? And this business of patriarchy, this business of sexism being raised by the Me Too movement is killing people. And it's interesting to me. I don't want to get like too distant when I say it's interesting, but I do definitely see the... I see the factors being brought together in the killing of black women, because patriarchy kills black women in the society when black women aren't treated by white doctors for their diabetes. It kills black women grossly disproportionately in childbirth, the shame of the nation, surely. And it kills black trans women. And I was just looking at black trans women statistics. They're popping up again. There's so many, I don't have the exact statistics, but there's so many black women still being killed in this extremely brutal way. Women who are stabbed many, many times, women who are shot 20 times. Vicky Gutierrez stabbed to death and had her home lit on fire. Tanya Harvey gunned down on a dead-end street. Celine Walker killed in Jacksonville, Florida in a hotel room. And then that last case, the fact that she was trans was only brought to the attention of the media after a writer, Monica Roberts, blogged about the case. That person would have been put down in the statistics and buried and forgotten about in a male identity, even though she lived as a woman. And it's, for some reason, it's, well, not for some reason, but because of our sexism and our racism, it brings together in a focus. All those beams come together and burn black women up.
Yeah, and thank you very much for bringing that up. It's important that we look at gender relations, we look at gender enforcement, that we look at transphobia, that we look at homophobia, that we look at the intersectionality of race with all of this and with class with all of this. That is absolutely essential. You cannot look at any one of these elements absent the other influences and intersectionalities. So thank you very much for that. I want to remind our listeners that coming up this morning, 9 o'clock on Veterans Voice Radio, Northwest Vets for Peace, deal with matters of war and peace. And my gosh, there's a lot to be dealing with right now. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views speaks to organizers from the Changemakers Conference in Corvallis. It's a platform for women to enhance their activism. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, Radio Zine presents Sojourner Truth Radio and a discussion on decolonizing science, dark matter, axions, and the physics of melanin and scientific racism.
The physics of melanin.
And scientific racism. That is right. And that is all there on Sojourner Truth Radio at 11 o'clock, which is an awesome show. I've caught that many times. Great show. So, also to let you know that KABU's Kickstarter campaign is live and lively. You know, KABU is, we've been here for 50 years, and we teach folks from the community radio skills, media skills, so that we can all participate in telling our stories, in representing our communities, in broadening discourse, in providing entertainment and music and poetry that is meaningful and relevant, and not worried about, you know, selling toothpaste and cars and deodorant. You know, like, say, commercial stations might. We are telling the truth from many perspectives at many levels, because that's what we do here. We give a, we have a free training program that gives the microphone to those that commit and that give a damn in representing their communities. We want you to support this Kickstarter campaign. It is important that we all pitch in together, and we are trying something new, and we are trying to raise $20,000 online so that we can continue this super vital mission. Please help us build a city of media makers. Please go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter, or you can just go to kboo.fm, because I gotta say, it's right there in a banner. You can't miss it. And you can get to our Kickstarter campaign quite easily and give what you can, because when we all pitch in, just, you know, $5, $10, $50, whatever you have, we raise a substantial amount of money that continues to empower communities across Cascadia, so, and around the world through our reach on kboo.fm. So do that, won't you?
I'm interested to see how it'll work out. I was just looking at the Kickstarter page. You go to kickstarter.com, and then you put in help KABU build. Well, if you put in KABU,
you could just search KABU.
Help KABU build
a
city of media makers, and it says that we've got 37 backers so far. 21 days to go. So this is a very different thing from membership on air membership drive, and I'm just interested to see how it'll play out. And all you have to do is click the button that says back this project, and you can put in your money, and I hope that you will, because this is how we do it.
This is how we do it. And, you know, for those of you that don't know, KABU really does change lives. I feel I've often attributed KABU with saving my life when I was growing up queer in St. John's, and like the only one I knew, besides maybe one uncle that people had a little hushed rumor about, but we didn't really talk about that much. And besides that, we all love him, don't we? Yeah. You know, and so you know, aside from that, the only example I knew of other gay and lesbian people, because this is the 70s and we only really talked about gay and lesbian people back then, were the Anita Bryant Crusades. You know, so I knew that there were some others, and I knew that this one woman who liked to sell orange juice was organizing large groups of people to, I don't know, try to annihilate us or something, and possibly by drowning us in orange juice. I'm not sure. It was all a rather interesting and confusing time for an 11-year-old me. And when I was 12, I was I turned on the radio. My dad would always listen to the True Vine show on KABU, the Bluegrass show. And so KABU was still left on, and I flipped on the radio, and by God, there was a show produced by queer people. And they were talking about being queer, and they were being really funny about it. They had a sense of humor. They had insightful analysis and humor together. They were snarky. They were wonderful, and they saved my life. Because suddenly I realized, not only was I not completely alone, but there were grown-ups who had the feelings that I had, that were smart, that were funny, and that had a microphone. And I vowed that when I could ride the bus alone across town, I was going to figure out what KABU was. And I did. And that's my story with KABU. And I have to say, in sometime later, I actually met Teresa here. And, well, the rest, as they say, is history. or something like it.
Well, and sometime later actually came out on the air, sort of like in real time on KBOO, and gave my reasons for, you know, why I felt that I could not live as a man. And that was 2001. That was 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Ani stuck with me because Ani goes for souls. She doesn't go for genitalia.
It's true. I've never been particularly package-oriented. Let's just go ahead and I'll give out that phone number one more time. 503-231-8187. That's the number to call. And let's go ahead and talk to Bill. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Phil. But now more than ever, you definitely need community radio stations and local non-corporate news broadcasters giving the real news, cause especially the internet curtailing leftist sites like Truthdig or Consortium News. But onto the topic of women and the white patriarchy, I found an article in The Guardian about a graphic novel in which it was discussing how women are assigned being a taskmaster at the household as like another managerial job on top of everything else they do. And so it's one of those things I was just discussing with someone about how women do get underappreciated and overworked in the household and in life. And it's one of those things that this long-term standing of women being used taken advantage of by men. And you look even at Cupid and St. Valentine's Day and the Roman and Greek origins of it, and it was kind of a domineering kind of notion behind it. But keep up the great work, and it's a great job out there.
Hey, thanks so much for your call this morning.
Yeah.
Take care.
Well, I guess that brings up one of those basic things. I was talking about the silence. Things are left unjust and left in place by silence. And so here's one for the men. Have you washed the dishes lately?
You say scary things,
Teresa.
Have
you?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. How about mopping the floors?
Have you mopped the floors lately?
That's one I haven't noticed so much. Because, you know, I have straight male friends. It's true. And I do see a number of guys washing dishes because they feel like, you know, they want to participate. They're doing something. Washing floors. Washing window, dusting. You dust?
Yeah, what I want to say is, if it's collectively decided between the two of you or however many that it needs to be done, that, you know, that it's a necessity, does it fall to the woman?
Yeah. I think that's an important question. I think I might be going back to my own childhood again. My dad worked full time outside the house. My mother worked full time inside the house, and my dad would also do the dishes. Never saw him dust. Never saw him do laundry. Couldn't iron. Actually, my mother and I took a vacation without him once, she very carefully wrote down instructions, and I remember her showing him how to make a can of Campbell's condensed soup.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
A sandwich.
No, he did. By the time he was 50, he had learned to make a peanut butter and honey sandwich by himself, and he could pour his own Wheaties. But if it involved heat, if it involved putting something in a saucepan on a stove, I made a damn fine cup of tea, a good cup of coffee, but if it involved food ingredients on a stove, it was beyond his kin. And I always found that fascinating for somebody who was rather blazingly competent in the rest of his life.
Yeah, well, it has to be about inhibition. It's not really that he couldn't figure out that you apply heat to the soup.
Pretty sure, because like, carpenters are smart. They have to deal with numbers and stuff.
That made him feel bad. Someone who's transitioned from male to female roles, I encountered that odd burning feeling. It's like I'm doing this thing that women do, and for some reason I feel bad. You know, I feel...
Because we're taught that things that women do don't count and are lesser.
It's like, I almost felt like being a perv, you know, washing the dishes.
Well, what can I do? What can I say? 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning if you two would like to join in this conversation. We had somebody call to ask me to talk about this. I am absolutely was planning to, and that is, you know, there are so many ways of organizing families and so many ways of being in this world. What about somebody who actually does not have interest in romance? What if, you know, somebody is asexual who doesn't really see the world in this way of sexual attraction, no matter who that might be? And this is, you know, also an important part of our population, and one that I think is particularly left out. Doesn't really suit it. But again, this week that we talk about couples and all that they do, and all of that love and romance stuff, we are really excluding and erasing the lives of aces, asexual and aromantic people.
I guess it goes back to that Emma Goldman quote. I mean, if love isn't equal, if love is a transaction on a social or even economic basis, then if you're asexual, then you're just off the ledgers.
You know, maybe that is a part and parcel. Interesting. Please do give us a call and let us know what you're thinking. And let us know about your family. I know folks who are not in monogamous relationships but are choosing to have families with more than two primary partners who are engaged in raising children. How is that working? You know, talk about your family. Step into the spotlight for a moment. And, you know, share with us, because this is that time. We are talking about non-traditional families, queer families, multiple partners, people who choose never to marry but to be in partnership with each other, people who are trying to eschew traditional gender role socialization but perhaps haven't even found out how deep that goes for them, as we have discussed this morning, looking at the role of parenting and who is doing what in the family. For myself, you know, I have, as somebody who is pansexual, who is attracted to the person and not really caring so much about the package they're in, as somebody who has lived significant parts of my life with other women in primary partnerships, that whole gender role conformity in relationships gets blown out of the water pretty fast. And I will always remember these conversations that I would have with my beloved ex's grandmother. You know, when my ex-wife came out to her family, she was written off by her parents and accepted by her grandmother in a kind of unusual way. And because grandma had watched Oprah, and Oprah had told her that lesbians were okay. And anyway, beyond the family dynamic there, when we visited grandma, she was a little obsessed with gender roles, because I don't think she could really imagine a partnership without them. And so she was trying very hard to figure out which person in this relationship of two women, who was the butch and who was the femme, I believe would be the parlance of the 80s when this was happening, I guess maybe 1990. Who did the more masculine things and who did the more feminine things? And she couldn't quite come out and ask it in those ways. So she did things like, well, which one of you cooks? Oh, well, we very much enjoy cooking together. Well, which one of you cleans the bathroom? Neither of us really. We kind of flip a coin when it really has to be done, I suppose. It's sort of like playing chicken. Who's going to get there first? Or, you know.
Which devolves to who's the man and who's the woman.
Yeah, no, that was exactly what I'd said. And, you know, which, you know, well, who changes the oil in the car? We're both, whichever one's driving it when the oil light comes on, we, you know. Who changes the tire? We call AAA. You know, and there really, we had not fallen into that. How could we? We were both fairly, you know, on the 1 to 5 butch femme continuum We were both pretty much 2.5s. So how could we possibly, assign these tasks by gender role? We did them by who needed, by why they needed to be done and who was closest at that time. And that was really instructive to me about how things fall out in straight relationships. Since I'd never been in one, I hadn't really understood how far that went. There's me. Anyway, so I remember when I started, let's just say, courting Teresa, when I was pitching Woo here at KBOO during a membership drive as we were, stationed to pitch together in 1994. She had said something about her car needing oil, and I jumped up and I'm like, I have some extra oil in my car. My car is really leaky too. Here, I'll go add, which one's yours? I'll just add some.
Wild horses wouldn't have stopped you from oiling that car.
You were stunned. You were a little flabbergasted. I'm not sure what you thought of me at that moment, but I went and I added oil to your damn car. That's what I did. That was me courting Teresa. Oh, the romance. 503-231-8187. Romantic fool, that's me. Let's go ahead and talk to James. Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think the one thing that a lot of people miss is that, and I don't know, I'm a little late to this conversation. I don't know if you discussed it, but gender roles they're Western, they're colonial. It's mm-hmm. an easy way to be able to box people, to be able to throw, because even in the pre-colonial cultures, especially African, Aztec, even in Jewish culture, they acknowledge more than one gender, more than one way to display gender. There's not just women, there's not just men, I was just watching some pictures of a tribe in Africa where the men do their, to woo the women, they do makeup,
yeah,
and wear big fancy hats, and it's like, I myself, I definitely take more after my mom than my dad. I have a lot of feminine, I have a lot more feminine tendencies in myself than I do masculine most of the time. And those are things that I've had to work around myself. And it's like, the people just, they want to label you because it's easier that way. But recognizing that life is a spectrum, like you said, a continuum. That's another word. Mm-hmm. That's another great word, because there's lots of things that there's lots of things that just don't fit into those gender role boxes. There's a lot of things that don't fit into types of sexuality. It's just realizing that we all have different things. We all have things that we need, that we require of ourselves, and it's up to us, especially those like myself who are cis male, mm-hmm. or cis presenting, or however you want to say it,
yeah,
that we need to have those that we need to be the ones to be able to lead those conversations and be able to say, hey, for me, I have a coworker who is trans, and I've had to correct several of my other coworkers and saying, it's not him, it's her.
Right.
And you need to use her name, not his, not the name that he went by before he went through his transformation.
Right.
It's a her now, and you need to just deal with that.
Right.
I'm sorry that makes you uncomfortable, but it's just, and it's like, that one lady who called first, and it's like, it's just so exhausting. I mean, that's, oh my gosh, if that isn't cis privilege, I don't know what is. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry it's exhausting to you that other people have needs and requirements that need to be met, and it requires you to be more aware and more, more aware of yourself and your privilege. Like, okay.
Yeah.
If it's exhausting to you to talk about, imagine how exhausting it is to live it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, James. I thank you very much for your call. Oregon is actually, I believe, the first state. I know that we've just started, but I believe we are the first state to recognize non-binary gender on state IDs and driver's licenses. So you no longer have to check box M or box F. I think that is a huge step forward. In 2016... New York City recognized 31 gender identities and expressions. It's on the mind-boggling end of the spectrum. It is important, just as James was saying, many cultures around the world have have had roles, places honoring many more than two genders. It's time we catch up.
31, really?
Yes.
Not very binary.
Not very binary. So I think that's huge. And, you know, so we have that in New York City. We have the USA Today having an article from last year saying states are starting to recognize a third gender. Again, that's cool. But three genders aren't really enough either, though I'm really happy with that step forward. It's interesting. I was an anthropology student.
So you probably liked the reference to Margaret Mead earlier.
Yes.
Oops, now I'll have to dig it out.
Okay. So let's just go ahead and give that phone number out, 503-231-8187. That's the number to call. And you can join us in this conversation this morning here on KBOO Community Radio, where we are engaged in our Kickstarter campaign. Please help KBOO thrive and continue our training program, turning out media makers for the last 50 years, giving access to the microphones to people just like you from communities to step forward and represent, to share your ideas, your thoughts, your analysis, the music that moves you, the poetry that means something. We are here moving forward to make a better world together. Please contribute to our Kickstarter campaign. You can find it easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the Kickstarter banner, or you can try kboo.fm/Kickstarter. So you can also follow Positively Revolting throughout the week. You know, once a week is not enough. You can go and follow us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. You can also like our page on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook, Positively Revolting. Let's go ahead and talk to Francis. Good morning, Francis. You're on the air. Hi, Francis.
You're my favorite KBOO people. Hey.
Here in the studio. But, yes.
Hello. Now I'm not. All right.
Oh, you're here. Hello? Yeah, you're here.
Okay. It's interesting you were talking about this. Love is love is love. But I just observed that the new millennial young people are kind of sinking in or soaking in, or it's already happened. I noticed among my children, my sons in particular, I go over to my young son's house and he's doing the laundry and mopping the floors while his fiance is playing soccer, you know. And my older son, the other day, I walked to his house and he was helping the little ones get their Valentine's ready for school, you know.
That is awesome.
And they both love to cook. My son-in-law loves to share recipes, you know, so it's they have a whole different frame of reference. They're still, I think, a man thing.
Uh-huh.
They're men, you know.
Uh-huh,
but
yeah.
It's like, and you know, there is a difference between men and women. But they don't mind, and it isn't even considered something wrong with doing housework and looking after the kids and doing those sorts of things. So I think that's marvelous.
Good on them.
That is fantastic.
I mean,
yeah, and I think a lot of young men are that way now.
Yeah, I think that we are seeing a real shift in the generations. I've noticed with many of the young folks that are coming into KBOO and involving themselves, there's a gender fluidity where people are not, where many people are feeling non-binary, are coming out as non-binary people who are eschewing the traditional gender roles and the traditional feelings ascribed to one gender or another. And
right.
I think that is awesome.
And the young ones who are heterosexual,
yeah,
aren't tripping.
Yeah, yeah.
They could care less.
Yeah.
What you are.
Yeah. There's a growing acceptance. Right.
Pardon?
Yeah, there's a growing acceptance in the next
right.
generation.
I think it's great that you talk yeah. about that liberating aspect of it. I mean, that's what it's really about. I mean, yeah. it's about freedom, and I feel it myself as a transgender woman. I keep this voice, and one reason I've decided to keep this voice and just to be, you know, sort of obviously intersex is because of people who have decided to just break that gender binary and be themselves. And so
right.
I've been accorded that extra space, and it's nice. You know, I can breathe easier this way.
That's wonderful. Anyway, I appreciate your conversation today.
Oh, well, thank you. And I always appreciate your contributions. Thank you, Francis.
Thanks.
Take care.
503-231-8187, the number to call this morning.
Well, you know, the Me Too has hit the White House, too. And so we've got Trump's take on this, which is hypocritical, of course. I mean,
I can't imagine.
Rob Porter thing. Rob Porter, as you know, White House aide, author was writing in the Atlantic saying it is unknown whether he would have resigned if only one of his ex-wives alleged abuse or if the photo of one of the women with a black eye had not gone public. But the way Trump talks about it, it's like he was accused without a chance to defend himself, or there needs to be
due process.
He's talking about due process, but which is something he didn't seem to care about when it came to Hillary Clinton.
Or when it came to five young men who were accused of raping a jogger in Central Park, who were all later acquitted after spending some time in prison, like quite a few years in prison. He had taken out full-page ads calling for the death penalty for these young men.
So it's that intersection of racism and sexism again. I mean, at the intersection of racism and sexism, you will find President Trump.
I can't believe you put those two words together.
Intersection?
The one that started Trump. With president. I just think of him as the person currently occupying the White House. Yeah, anyways, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Veterans Voice, Northwest Vets for Peace, dealing with matters of war and peace. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, the Radio Zine presenting Sojourner Truth Radio with a discussion on decolonizing science, dark matter, axions, the physics of melanin, and scientific racism. All of that and so much more coming up on your very own community radio station. Please do contribute to our Kickstarter campaign this morning. In fact, just do it right now. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And good morning, Dee. You are on the air.
Good morning. I'm just so really thrilled to hear this conversation, and I want to acknowledge both of you for being so open and forthcoming about your lives, what you've observed, and Ani, particularly talking about growing up in St. John's and feeling alone, and that brought me to what I really wanted to call about, which is to say, I see that KABU, in every way imaginable, is creating the future which is liberated from all of the things that the patriarchy and colonial culture, which is dominating and violent in its nature. KABU is the future, while it's the present as well. And I'm just so amazed, because what courage it takes for everybody. I listen to all the programs that I never would be privy to or part of, because I am white, privileged, cisgendered female, and I listen to This Way Out, and I listen to Native Radio, and I listen to Labor Radio, and I learn so much.
Yeah.
But I guess what I want to say is that you are the leaders.
Thank you.
Leaders of a new, and I don't mean you.
Yeah,
only,
KABU.
But
yeah.
KABU, and KABU, and everybody who supports KABU.
Yeah.
So this is partly that acknowledgement and partly an encouragement. I don't want to say a pitch, but an encouragement for everybody listening to really understand what KABU represents. It is something extraordinary. And P.S., I want to just add a thing about on the lines of gender roles and ageism and ableism and say that my partner is 73 and cisgendered male, and he does all the vacuuming, all the dishwashing, and all the laundry that pertains to him, plus taking out the trash and stuff, and he's blind.
That's fantastic.
So that's a challenge for all the men out there.
I'm impressed.
Could do all of those things and don't do them.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty cool. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your kind words. I just could not agree with you more. I think that KABU has been such an important force in shifting what is Portland, in creating Portland. And now that Portland is changing very rapidly, hoping to, also maintain that radical edge that has been here and has been pushing things forward. KABU has been a vibrant part of that and has reached so many people, has changed so many lives, including mine. And Dee, I just cannot thank you enough for those kind words. I've often learned about other communities at KABU. I have had the experience of also turning on KABU and really not liking what somebody is saying at all. But I'm still learning about somebody. I'm still learning about community. If I actually agreed with everything I heard on KABU, I would know that we're not really doing our job.
Yeah, I want to thank you too, Dee. But, you know, I think I get used to the radical edge here at KABU. I want to thank KABU because it's such a liberating space for me to come in here and do the work that I do, and know that just almost without exception, I'm going to be accepted here. And I think it affects the way I look at things. I have to remember that I live in a broader society. For example, I was looking at news of seems to be a big deal that a transgender woman is breastfeeding her child. And it caught me by surprise because I'm like, okay, transgender woman breastfeeding her child, okay, yeah, uh-huh. And but for the society, apparently this is still a big shock. And I think that's the KABU effect. It's like I come into here and I can't imagine that it would be a big deal, but for the society generally it is. And that tells you what a cutting edge KABU society, you know, this group of programmers and volunteers and staff is. So good on you, KABU.
Yeah, KABU. Go, KABU. And just to wrap up, I guess I want to encourage folks to continue being involved with your communities, being involved with this conversation, and being involved with KABU. I want to thank LaBrie and William, who gave to our Kickstarter campaign this morning. Thank you so very much for doing that. We need your support to continue to make Portland a city of media makers. You too have a part to play. It is participatory media. Please share our Kickstarter campaign in your social media worlds. It's kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And you can share that on Facebook. You can share it on Instagram. Share it on Twitter. Share it around. Because it is, in fact, a way that we are really trying to secure our continuation in providing free training to community members to be the media over the next 50 years. Come on in. The weather's fine. You, excuse me, are an important part of this community radio station. So again, that's kboo.fm/Kickstarter. I've been here this morning. My name's Ani. I've been here with Teresa this morning. I'm Positively Revolting. Teresa, my beloved partner of almost 24 years. Goodness, how time flies. We met here at KABU. So KABU, the station of love and the station that accepts us wherever we fall in that gender spectrum. It is such an important thing to discuss. How are you living your life authentically? How are you deconstructing those gender roles, socialized, conformist, mandatory gender role conformity? How are you expressing love in your life? All of these questions have been asked, and y'all have your own answers. So continue the conversation. You can, again, follow us on Facebook. That's Positively Revolting. You can find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Teresa, you have some social medias too, don't you?
I do, actually. You can find me on Twitter at KBOO Press Watch. And I'm on Facebook, Teresa Mitchell. Of course, there's several Teresa Mitchells, so you just have to look, and I guess it's not hard to figure out which one's me.
Yeah, because your picture is your cat. That's always going to be very associative. Anyways, thanks for listening again this morning. Do contribute to our Kickstarter campaign. I'll be back next week interviewing Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz about the Second Amendment and gun culture. And I'm looking forward to that. Please tune in. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the White Ally Toolkit Workshop on Saturday, February 17th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Vancouver in Vancouver, Washington. The White Ally Toolkit Project, led by Dr. David Kempt, focuses specifically on helping allies have more effective encounters with people who are skeptical that racism is a problem. Utilizing contemporary research on persuasion, this interactive workshop leaves participants with concrete skills to advance racial equity. Again, that's the White Ally Toolkit Workshop on Saturday, February 17th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Vancouver, 4505 East 18th Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio trains media makers. We believe community resilience happens when citizens learn how to make their own media. For the last 50 years, KBOO has trained thousands of citizen journalists to report on what goes on in the streets of Portland and far beyond. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city activated and aware through radio. Invest in Portland's future media makers and join KBOO on Kickstarter today.
Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. Donate to the campaign and share it with your friends. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
It's 9 o'clock, 9:01. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming